Some days it's interest rates. Some days it's the share market. Some days it's the price at the servo. But the business story is never just business. I'm Carrington Clark, host of ABC Business Daily. From Monday to Thursday, I'm joined by the ABC's business reporters to break down the biggest stories in business, finance, and the economy. And on Fridays, Alan Kohler jumps in the chair for That's Business, sitting down with industry leaders, movers and shakers, CEOs and founders to talk to the people leading and building the economy. All in the same ABC Business Daily feed. Find us on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Wandering Country, I'm Luke Sidham-Dunton, and today on The Breakfast Wrap, Sally Sara interviews the boss, the head of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. And boy, oh boy, there is a lot to get through.
Why did the ABC think it was necessary to seek a new director of news? On potential changes coming to the ABC, Grace Tame was criticised for ABC Radio presenter Charlie Pickering gave his view, describing her appointment as problematic.
You're going to hear answers to all of those questions posed to the ABC managing director, Hugh Marks. Then we'll turn overseas and look at relations between the United Kingdom and the United States as multiple Trump administration officials question Europe's stance on immigration in rather odd settings.
Different European beaches are stormed by different dangerous ideologies.
Pete Hegseth's D-Day speech, drawing links to immigration, is drawing criticism from across Europe. You'll hear from a former Conservative Party MP in the UK. From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. Well, it's not often that we turn the mic on ourselves, but we like to think that we do it for good reason whenever we do. Today, you're going to hear a pretty in-depth interview with the boss of the ABC, Hugh Marks. But before we get into it, I'll walk you through some of the stories that we're going to cover because they're quite specific, but they cover a broad range of topics. Firstly, Sally asks about the future of the organisation after Hugh Marks indicates programming changes could be coming the ABC's way. There's also a discussion about KPMG. You'll remember our special episode last week about the whistleblower scandal engulfing the consulting firm and questions around its audit practices. Now, the National Audit Office actually employs KPMG to conduct annual audits of the ABC. So Sally gets into that later on in the interview. There's also the discussion around former Australian of the Year, Grace Tame, and her new podcast series on the ABC, discussing her experience with autism. We also talk about the comment from ABC radio presenter Charlie Pickering, describing her appointment as problematic. You'll hear if the managing director thinks those comments were a breach of the broadcaster's code of conduct. But we're going to start with news of a very significant departure at the National Broadcaster.
The ABC's news director, Justin Stevens, has resigned. Mr. Stevens had been the director of ABC News for 4 years. He resigns from the ABC after nearly two decades at the organisation. He was 38 when made news director.
Justin Stevens said it was the right time for him to go, for both professional and personal reasons. And in his place, within just a day, the ABC announced a new leader of its news division, Reuters executive editor Simon Robinson. So how did this all happen? What was the process to replace the boss of one of the biggest news departments in the country? Let's find out. Here is Sally Sara's interview with ABC Managing Director Hugh Marks on Radio National Breakfast.
Why did the ABC think it was necessary to seek a new director of news?
Well, I think going back to that, it was Justin Stevens who resigned, but obviously Justin and I were having discussions about what we both felt the future of news for the ABC was, and maybe we felt there were different directions to pursue. I think there are a couple of key problems we've got to really deal with. One is a lot of people, particularly in the live news area of the ABC, I think feel stretched and pressured, and that's because we've added services to what we do, and more work obviously leads to more pressure. Sometimes that leads to having to spread our resources more thinly, and that's a problem that I know I've got to solve. And at the same time, I guess we're being asked to do more. You know, we do a lot of great live news products and programs, but we've got an obligation to do more in the town hall space and probably bring more new news formats to market. And so, you know, the pressure's on to do more. So, you know, all of those things together, I think, mean that we've got to go through some changes and I guess we can have different views on what those changes should be and how we go about implementing them.
There's still some confusion around the timeline here. When did the selection process for Justin Stephens' successor begin?
We've been talking about this for some time, so I knew Justin's resignation, you know, was an option. So, you know, I've been talking to people all around the globe who are, you know, leaders in the news space, space for many months. So, you know, when we were in that position where it was clear Justin was going to go, I was able to move forward with another candidate.
Did Mr. Stephens resign under his own steam, or was he asked to resign?
I think Mr. Stephens certainly wanted to resign, so that's what we agreed was the relevant way for him to go. So let's, you know, I'll respect that decision.
So you started seeking a successor before Justin Stephens confirmed that he would resign?
Well, before that was confirmed to the audience, yes, but this was a discussion he and I had been having for some time.
So you knew that he would resign and you started seeking a successor, or you thought he might resign and you started seeking a successor?
We knew it was a possibility, yep.
What does that mean?
Well, we knew that if we couldn't get agreement on the way forward that his resignation was inevitable. I'd been, you know, in a formal way but also in an informal way, just meeting people as I should as the head of the ABC, making sure we've got the very best executive team to lead the organisation forward.
Did you inform Mr. Stephens that you were seeking a successor prior to him tendering his resignation?
No, that wasn't a discussion we had.
So he didn't know you were doing that?
He did not know.
Why didn't you tell him if you felt that his resignation was inevitable?
Oh, I think, Sally, you know, I have to go about my role in the way that I see best, and, you know, sometimes that involves, you know, conversations with executives and sometimes it doesn't. Like, we don't necessarily know what the future's going to happen, so, you know, I need to be prepared for all scenarios. We undertake extensive succession planning for all of our key executive roles all the time. I mean, that's sort of a requirement of any modern organisation. And anyone that thinks we're not doing that succession planning all the time, I think they should expect that. So, you know, I don't think there's anything really unusual in this whole set of events.
If I'm understanding correctly, you're characterising this as discussions with other news leaders, but had you formally engaged a recruitment company to undertake this search prior to Justin Stephens' resignation?
Yeah, I think I've confirmed as part of that we did. And that was, you know, part of, again, a general sort of succession planning exercise that we do across the organisation. So, you know,
have you done that with other executives?
We do that all the time, Sally, with all of our key roles. It's so important that we know, because obviously these things can go two ways. One is, you know, the ABC can say it's not working, or the other way is an executive, for any number of reasons, can say it's time for me to move on. So we always need to be prepared for that and not be caught on the hop.
More broadly, on potential changes coming to the ABC, you had this to say in a recent interview with our colleague Alan Kohler. Let's take a listen.
We might be doing, I'll give you an example, a legacy television show that has been around for 40 years. We still do it. There's still a lot of work that goes into it. All that work is valid and there's a lot of people working hard to do it. But that particular show may not be the sort of content that we want for the future.
What did you mean by that? What are we talking about there?
Those comments were really directional and, you know, it talks to the problems that we spoke about when we first started this morning, that, you know, we may have been doing things that got us to the point where we are today, but they may not necessarily be the things that will get us into the future. You know, a couple of things are changing the way people consume media, and they're changing quite significantly. And so we're looking at things that either talk to the ABC's expertise. So will they talk to what we can do that is live and local, because that is a real ABC strength, or will it be something that we need to move more to distinctive programming that stands out in a very different competitive landscape? So, you know, that's directional.
So was it hypothetical, or were you talking about an existing program?
No, it was definitely hypothetical. And it really, a better term would have been, what got us to where we are today is not necessarily the things that are going to be successful in the future.
Former Australian of the Year Grace Tame was criticised for chanting the phrase "globalise the intifada" at a rally against the visit of Israeli President Isaac Herzog earlier this year. She's now part of a new podcast series on autism for the ABC. Were her previous comments factored into the decision to engage her for this project?
Well, when we engaged her for the project, that was actually some time ago, so it was before those particular comments that were made. And it was certainly also before, I think, the much-quoted interview that she did with Hamish McDonald on Sydney Mornings were also made. So, you know, that was when the original engagement happened. Obviously, I understand why people feel Grace shouldn't have a program on the ABC, given, you know, the controversy that's reported and associated with many of her comments. But I think if you look at the program itself, you know, it's a great podcast that she's done a great job on a topic that I'm sure will be of real interest and real importance to many Australians who suffer from those conditions, and particularly young Australians and young Australian women. So, you know, there's a balance in all these things to be, you know, for the ABC to be ensuring that we bring great content to air, and also acknowledging that, you know, with some of the people that we work with, sometimes there will be controversy. So, you know, I've spoken to Grace, and I know, you know, what she really abhors is violence of any kind, particularly violence against women and children. And I think everybody can relate to what she really believes in. So, but again, the podcast that she's done is great, and I encourage people to listen to it.
Given the ABC's strict employee guidelines, did you think it was appropriate that ABC Radio presenter Charlie Pickering gave his view, describing her appointment as problematic?
Yeah, obviously we've looked at Charlie's comments. I think he did express that they were his own view. They weren't representative of the ABC. It was a little bit on the hop and a little bit not. So I think, you know, we felt comfortable that we were able to accept that his comments weren't a breach of the ABC code of conduct.
Governments and statutory bodies such as the Reserve Bank have been reviewing their relationship with the accounting firm KPMG after a whistleblower exposed alleged wrongdoing. The National Audit Office employs KPMG to conduct annual statutory audits of the ABC. Are you concerned about KPMG's access to ABC information and material?
I think that's a matter for the Australian National Audit Office, as you said, Sally. Does it give me real concern? It's hard to know without any specific reference to things that have happened regarding ABC information, whether that's the case or not. So I'm sure that's something that the Audit Office will look at, and I'm sure it's something that our committees and our board will look at as well.
And that is the ABC Managing Director, Hugh Marks, there. If you want to hear more about the KPMG scandal, you can find Friday's special episode of The Breakfast Wrap on ABC Listen, and you can hear full versions of all the interviews we do on the app as well. Well, it's been a big week of news out of the Middle East, and it is only Tuesday. This morning, we woke to the development that Iran and Israel had announced a pause in their military operations against each other. The latest round of strikes beginning on Sunday evening when Iran launched missiles at northern Israel. That, in retaliation for Israel's expanded military operations in Lebanon. What we saw yesterday was swift retaliation from Israel. There was a fresh round of tensions between the two regional adversaries. So what does the international community make of all of it? The stop and start dynamic of this conflict and the impact that it's having on populations right around the world. Matt Thistlethwaite. He's the Assistant Minister for Foreign Affairs and Trade, and here's what he had to say to Sally.
It is quite concerning. Thankfully, they've agreed to continue the ceasefire, which is important, but we know it's a very fragile ceasefire, and I think that Australians are becoming increasingly frustrated with the stop-start nature of this conflict and the fact that the Strait of Hormuz still largely remains closed to shipping, and that's having a dramatic impact on Australia's domestic markets, particularly the fuel market. And it's now starting to flow through to household goods like food and groceries. And obviously that's had an effect on inflation. So we want to see this conflict brought to an end as quickly as possible. We want this temporary ceasefire to become a permanent ceasefire and the Strait of Hormuz to open fully once again to shipping and the international energy markets to return to normal.
What conversations has the federal government had with the Israeli ambassador to Australia to call for de-escalation?
Well, we've had several conversations with the Israeli ambassador over the course of the last month, principally around the disgusting treatment of Australian detainees by the Israel Minister Ben-Gavir and calling for those detainees to be released. Thankfully, they were. Now, there's some terrible allegations that have been made and we're calling on Israel to thoroughly investigate those allegations as quickly as possible. But we've had a continual dialogue regarding the importance of Israel recognising Lebanon's territorial integrity and ceasing the incursions that the Israeli Defence Force has had into southern Lebanon, and more broadly, calling on Israel to abide by the ceasefire conditions and to negotiate a lasting outcome. The only way we're going to get peace in the Middle East is if there's a lasting two-state solution that's put in place in accordance with the policy that our government's adopted that's reinforced through the United Nations. And until we can say that the parties are willing to look to negotiate something like that, it makes it very difficult for this conflict to come to an end.
Italy says it's investigating Israeli Minister Itamar Ben-Gavir over the alleged mistreatment of flotilla activists last month, which Israel denies. There were Australians among those detained, and some of them have alleged mistreatment as well. Will Australia follow Italy's lead with similar action?
Well, everyone saw the footage, and everyone can see that Minister Ben-Gavir acted inappropriately, and that behaviour is certainly not acceptable. And then the allegations have been made. We believe those Australians, that we take those allegations very seriously, and that's why we've called on the ambassador or through the ambassador on the Israeli government to take action. Ultimately, Sally, this is going to be something that will have to be investigated by the Israeli authorities. It occurred whilst they had Australians detained on their territory and they're going to need to make an investigation. Now, we'll consider what other nations are doing internationally in our diplomatic efforts. But again, at the end of the day, Israel needs to take some action here.
Matt Thistlethwaite there, the Assistant Minister for Foreign Affairs and Trade, talking about Israel's detainment of a number of activists, including a number of Australians who've alleged mistreatment that Israel denies.
Different European beaches are stormed by different dangerous ideologies. Boats and men arrive. When will European capitals do something about that invasion?
So that is what the British Defence Secretary Pete Hegseth said at a D-Day anniversary event in France on the weekend. When he was talking about the anniversary of Allied forces landing on French beaches to liberate Western Europe, he referenced the arrival of migrants and refugees, mostly coming from Africa to Europe. It came just hours after the US Vice President J.D. Vance also raised immigration, this time blaming it for the death of murdered British teenager Henry Novak, a case that has sparked outrage after his British-born killer was sentenced to life in prison and police body cam footage raised questions about the police response. J.D. Vance said online that Henry Novak would still be alive if Europe had been stronger on, quote, the mass invasion of immigrants. It's a story that's been bubbling away in the UK over the last couple of days. So this morning, we got into it with Tobias Elwood. He's a former Conservative Party MP in the British Parliament, and he's been a minister for a couple portfolios. And he told Sally about his reaction, firstly, to Pete Hegseth's D-Day comments.
Oh, my goodness. It's had quite an effect here. His remarks would be discourteous, I think, and irresponsible at any time. But they were especially insulting when spoken at the anniversary of the D-Day landings. Many veterans and indeed families will rightly see this, I think, as offensive and totally inappropriate. Unfortunately, it's what we've come to expect from this current administration. We've just had the vice president make some very, very crass comments about a tragic death that took place here in this country, Henry Novak. And yet here we have an American vice president stirring up hatred and right-wing populism. It goes against more widely, I think, what they're saying, against what the D-Day landings were all about as well. This sense of unity and purpose that nations came together from all the way from Australia as well. Like-minded nations coming together, not just to stand up to tyranny, which we made that point, but to actually then go beyond that and eventually lay the foundations of our new global order designed to prevent future authoritarian states from exerting force to expand their spheres of influence. Yet, this is the irony here. After decades of supporting this from the United States perspective, our modern global order that they help write, you know, they help put together, Donald Trump, Pete Hegseth, and so forth, are now turning their back on global order. They're returning to isolationism and now treating Europe and indeed Britain as a competitor and actually trashing the UK at so many opportunities. We've had comments saying that migration is out of control, that we're actually impacted by Sharia law. I mean, statements coming from senior politicians in the White House, which have frankly shocked Britain as well. This is our closest security ally we're talking about. And sadly, it means that Europe and America are not on the same page. So Hegseth's comments are absolutely inappropriate, but I'm afraid not out of context, given where America is clearly going.
How would you characterise the relationship between the United States and the UK currently?
I think that's an important question to ask because it's embedded in shared vision of where our world should go. I've just stressed the start of that. It really came about during and after the Second World War. What we're seeing Donald Trump do is try to take it in a different direction. And when you speak to Republicans in America, they privately are very concerned about where Donald Trump is taking America itself. So this is certainly a temporary challenge, but it's not a permanent change in that critical relationship that we have. Dare I say it, when the world is being tested, when we're moving into a new era of insecurity. We've had 30 years, roughly, since the end of the Cold War, of relative peace, and we now clearly are in more challenging times. We require America to be part of that leadership to challenge greater authoritarianism, not least from what China wants to take the world. So this is concerning, but Ukraine, critically here, is where it comes to a fore with America choosing to support Putin. I can't put it any other way now. Bring him in from the cold. He's held summits with him, no longer funding any military support for Ukraine whatsoever. So these are testing times, there's no doubt about it. Worrying times as well.
And that is Tobias Elwood, a former Conservative Party MP in the British Parliament. Well, thank you so much for listening to today's episode of The Breakfast Wrap. All of those interviews were presented by Sally Sarah and produced by the Radio National Breakfast team, and Oscar Coleman produced The Breakfast Wrap. You can catch us every morning at 11:30 on Radio National and slightly earlier on ABC Listen. And if you are catching us on platforms other than ABC Listen, firstly, what are you doing? Download the Listen app. It's fantastic. But also, if you're listening to us elsewhere, chuck us a follow. And importantly, leave us a review. And if you can tell your friends, do that as well. I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon. We'll be back in your ears tomorrow.